Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. There are so many things to talk about. I don't really know if I want to talk about any of the news stories. I think you've heard them all, so why should I tell you what you already know? Although, on the other hand, since the newspapers are dying, and since I think the last I checked, something like 50, 55% of the American people who are interested in the news get it from talk radio. Now, you wouldn't know that from reading the newspapers, and they don't want to tell you that their competition drove them out of business. But we don't make the news. The interesting thing is we really need the newspapers. The Associated Press is very important in particular because they actually go out and do the hard work. What the bozos do with the newspapers is another story, and there's no point in talking about it. Now, I want to go to something the leftists have always said, which is, you know, think locally and act globally. Because there's an elevator murder mystery in San Francisco that goes to the heart of exactly what's wrong with this city and exactly what's wrong with extreme liberalism. I cannot for the life of me understand how a nation obsessed with cop shows, police shows, CSI, investigation shows, and et cetera, is ignoring what is staring them in the face with this elevator murder mystery. Now, it came out yesterday that they said this man fell to the bottom of this elevator shaft. I wasn't there, so I wouldn't know what happened. But I watch enough cop shows and mystery shows. Now, you could be listening to me in Palm Beach, New York City, Los Angeles, Seattle, Chicago. It doesn't matter. Everybody likes a good mystery, don't they? Well, we know it's a mystery as to how Obama, an unknown far-left senator, became president. But I'll leave that to historians. Assume there are still historians left willing to investigate such an obvious mystery as that. I want to focus on a murder mystery in San Francisco. A report came out yesterday from the so-called medical mis-examiner in San Francisco who said that Dr. Daniel Kleeman, a pro-Israel activist, fell to his death after becoming trapped in an elevator at 55 New Montgomery Street. Yet, strangely enough, certain things stare out at you from the bottom of the elevator shaft. It turns out that the emergency call button, which would have linked the doctor to an operator, and the alarm bell were functioning at the time of the incident. And also, I must tell you, the autopsy report has been examined by an unknown party who will join us at 3:30. That's right. We have an exclusive for you on the Savage Nation. And if you are a homicide detective, an ex-homicide detective, a medical examiner, an ex-medical examiner, if you are an ordinary detective, if you are a mystery story reader, I invite you to call the Savage Nation as you listen to this cover-up in San Francisco. And the cover-up is coming from somewhere. I don't know from where it's coming. But in my opinion, the medical mis-examiner right now is person number one. It says elevator shaft death is a mishap. Report states Dr. Kleeman forced doors open before his fall. And yet there's something odd. You see, Dr. Kleeman was 38 years old. He was very athletic. Dr. Kleeman was Jewish and a very potent Israel supporter. And he had had many interchanges with Palestinians in the streets of San Francisco at many rallies, screaming at each other. It also turns out that Dr. Kleeman was gay, and you're going to say, what does that have to do with anything? I'll tell you in a moment what it has to do with something. It has a lot to do with everything. Dr. Kleeman was gay, and you would think that because he was gay, the gay community would be outraged, screaming outside the mayor's office. But you see, it's something I learned a long time ago. Just as when a black is not a liberal, he is no longer, he loses his value to the Democrat Party. Just as in so many cases when a minority is no longer a useful idiot, for Nancy Pelosi, they cease to be minorities. The same is true here. Dr. Kleeman was gay, but it doesn't matter to the gay community because he supported Israel, which is worse, the worst sin he could have committed. So they don't care about it. And so, therefore, they say that Kleeman fell to his death on the way to an Arabic lesson. Question number one. How come he was the only one on the way to the Arabic lesson when all the other members of the class had been notified? Had he not been notified? Why was this doctor not notified that the Arabic class in this building had been canceled? Because if he had been notified, he wouldn't be there, correct? Okay. So why wasn't he notified? Who sent out the notices? See, if I were a homicide detective, that's where I'd begin. Who in the school, the Arabic school, sent out the email saying class canceled? Go to them first. Next, it turns out that Dr. Kleeman's lover was an Arab from the Arabic class, another man. Did anyone investigate the lover? Did they talk to him and ask him what happened that night? Now, somebody read the autopsy report. Listen to this carefully. Listen to this double talk and BS that they think you idiots are going to believe. They said that they found the doctor at the bottom of the shaft with a purple pen in his left hand. The medical misexaminer's report said it was possible that the doctor was able to pry open the elevator doors with that pen. Well, here's the question, Miss Medical Examiner. Where'd you get your medical degree? In a Kellogg's box? What a disgrace. This woman should be indicted immediately. The man falls 8 stories inside an elevator shaft. He fractures both arms in the fall, and the pen doesn't fall out of his hand? You mean it wasn't put in his hand after the fact? And by the way, was there any blood on the pen? Could the doctor have been using the pen to defend himself as he was being attacked? You see, ladies and gentlemen, something is wrong here. The newspapers say Kleeman's cause of death, accidental blunt force trauma, was initially caused for concern from friends and colleagues who said the Oakland doctor might have been killed because of his vocal and highly visible role with the counter-protest group SF Voice for Israel. Really? Well, not according to the San Francisco medical misexaminer, nor to the police chief, Heather Fong, who wants this to go away, and to the mayor of San Francisco, Annie Tuesome Newsom, who wants to make certain that the homicide rate stays below a certain number, even if it stares them in the face. Now, I want to make something very clear to everyone listening to this show across America and around the world. I don't know Dr. Kleeman. I don't know the medical examiner. I have nothing to gain and everything to lose by pursuing this story. And yet it bothers me. It bothers me that in a city that is so full of crap, it runs out of everyone's mouth in the political system. Every time they open up their pretty boy faces, I could see nothing but a sewer opening. I see a sewer coming out every time they open their mouth. A city that prides itself on false compassion. A city that prides itself on kissing the behinds of illegal aliens who should be driven out of the city instead of lauded by Nancy Pelosi. A city where everything is upside down. You would think that in a city like this, the people would be demanding a full and thorough investigation of this homicide or this alleged homicide inside the elevator shaft. But instead, they will accept even an obvious murder in this city. They save their anger only for conservatism and conservatives. And that's why I have a special mystery guest coming up at the turn of the hour who has read the autopsy report, and he's going to shock America on the Savage Nation. Again, I invite you, if you are a homicide detective, if you are a medical misexaminer, if you are a policeman who's interested in becoming a detective, I'd like you to call this program and tell me how in the world this could have been ruled an accident by the county medical misexaminer in San Francisco, and why the mayor of San Francisco will not intervene in this case. If you also want to talk about the liberation of Colonel Chesani and what I'm doing for him and what you're doing for him, that's a great topic. Or how about talking about old Chris Dodd? Chris Dodd is the most honest senator, as you well know, in American history. Now, it turns out that Senator Chris Dodd, speaking of mysteries, first he said he didn't add the bonus provision to the AIG stimulus package. Now Dodd is saying he lied, and he did add the provision to the stimulus package. Now, we don't know whether Chris Dodd is lying now or he was lying then, but in either case, he was lying. So what you have to understand is it may be genetic. It may be in Chris Dodd's DNA. And the reason I say that is that Chris Dodd had a father. His name was Thomas J. Dodd, and it turns out that old Tom Dodd was also a U.S. senator for the same state of Connecticut. But old Tom Dodd, it turns out, was hired by Guatemalan dictator Carlos Castillo Armas to lobby the U.S. government And as a result of Dodd's efforts, Guatemala got millions of dollars in USAID in the 1950s. Did you know that in the 1960s, Chris Dodd's father, Dodd Sr., took a series of Nazi-era gun laws, translated them into English, and had them incorporated into the Gun Control Act of 1968 in America? Did you know that? And did you know that Chris Dodd's father, Dodd Sr., in 1967, was censured by the U.S. Senate for using campaign funds for personal purposes? Wow. So far, no censure for Chris Jr. But as I say, it's all in the DNA. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, so we're talking about the San Francisco elevator murder mystery. In a few minutes, we'll have a mystery guest who read the autopsy report. You're not going to believe it. And the medical mis-examiner, you know, we don't understand why the FBI doesn't step in on this. It's such a clear case of something's being covered up. But anyway, we'll talk about it. We'll see if anything good comes of it, because we're after the truth here, nothing but the truth. We're talking about the strange case of Senator Chris Dodd saying he had nothing to do with the AAG bonuses. Then he said he did. So we don't know when he was lying, then or now. There's another story. Pelosi trucks in millions for city. House Speaker secures funds from federal spending bill for projects, charities, and programs. And I have the full list of where the money is going. So if you want to know where your tax money is going or what kind of jobs will be created, you can find out here. For example, the Japanese Community Youth Council is getting $142,000. That should be a big job creator. Chinese Hospital for facilities and equipment is getting almost $500,000. That should be a big job creator. The Family Violence Prevention Fund and the International Center to End Violence, two radical left-wing groups, are getting $2 million. I don't know how many more radicals they can hire in San Francisco. They're all fully employed. Let us see. San Francisco Biofuels Program, that's a real hot one. That's almost $1 million right there for no reason. Since gasoline is so cheap right now, they don't know how to give it away. Here's $1 million that Nancy got for the Gun Location Technology and Policing Project. Wow, that's a big one. Central Subway Project, $10 million. That's like the big dig in Boston. You know what I'm saying? Watch The Sopranos for that one. Keep tuning in The Sopranos. You'll find out that it's a tunnel to nowhere. Transbay Transit Center, $2 million. San Francisco General Hospital Equipment. I guess that's for more porno access for the doctors in the hospital. Here's one. Glide Foundation for Facilities and Equipment, $238,000. I guess they need the money to give out more turkey sandwiches to the poor. Amazing where this money is going. Elder Abuse Center, $300,000. Well, that's a big job creator. I guess they could hire a few people to look into elder abuse. $1.2 million for the rehabilitation of the historic Angel Island Immigration Station. That's a big one. I don't know who visits that, but why they would want to restore that, I have no idea either. So there it is. Pelosi brought in, out of the $410 billion federal spending bill, she brought in a lot of money for San Francisco. Most of it, let us call it pork barrel spending. All pork barrel all the time. But what do you want to talk about? 1-800-449-8255. What do you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? Mike in Modesto, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Great to hear you on, listen to you all the time up and down the highways. I got a little problem with our president and his schedule that he's going on this week. I watched this big special on ESPN the other night about his brackets, and I was a little upset by that.
What is it that he's going on the Tonight Show bothers you? Can someone tell me why that's an issue?
Well, you know what? I think there's more pressing issues right now than going on the celebrity tour trying to do. It's like he's on campaign again. It's like, relax, you won. You don't have to impress me with your basketball bracket.
Well, but you know who he's appealing to, don't you? The dummies of America. He's got to make sure the dummies continue to worship him.
I actually
don't think it's such a big deal. I think that this is a reflection of who Obama really is. He's a lightweight, posing as a heavyweight. So, I mean, I'm not upset about it. I think he belongs on the Tonight Show. In fact, I hope they offer him a permanent job. Maybe they'll offer him a fill-in for the Tonight Show. And then we could allow the adults to run America. Thanks for the call. Kansas City, Lyle, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. The question, I was a deputy sheriff for 12 years.
first question I got is this gay lover that he had. Who specifically is he, and who does he know?
Well, that's right. Wouldn't you start there? We're talking about the San Francisco elevator mystery, murder mystery. There's no evidence in the police report that they even interviewed the Arab lover who he met in the Arab class. There's no evidence they interviewed the individual who canceled the class. There's no evidence the genius in the police department. The police report says that the security cameras show Dr. Kleeman arriving at the building at a certain time. Listen to this. The cameras show him outside. It's a secured locked building. You can't get in without a card, a key card, right? He talks to somebody on the intercom. A few minutes later, he is seen entering the lobby. Did they interview the person who let him into the building? There's no evidence they did, Lyle. How could that not be in a police report?
It's just wild. You know, and who specifically took this class? You know, did anybody check into who they are in their backgrounds?
I don't know. It's the San Francisco Police Department. Ask Police Chief Heather Fung. There's a woman who would have all the answers. She's one of the best police chiefs in American history. Her and her friends up there have a lot on their plate, I realize. And this doesn't compare to feeding the homeless, but, you know, maybe she has some answers. Chicago, Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, there's no way that you can open the doors with a ballpoint pen with your hand. You need a special tool that is not quite available around that you push in the door on the top. There's a small hole. And the tool goes in, and the arm drops, and then you twist it to open the door. That's the only...
Listen to what the medical misexaminer in this sad, sick city wrote. Kleeman was found with a purple pen in his left hand. The so-called medical misexaminer's report said it was possible that he was able to pry open the elevator doors with that pen. You don't agree with that, of course.
No way. There's no way. That's a special tool that the elevator companies come around and examine to make sure that those doors are secure, and that's the only way.
So if you know this, Joe, and everyone in America knows this, how come the medical misexaminer thinks that no one cares about reality? It's because we have a mayor who lives in unreality. We have a supervisory board that lives in unreality. We have a newspaper guild that writes unreal stories. And so anyone could be thrown down an elevator shaft, and they could say he slipped.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about national, international, and local events. And the reason we're focusing somewhat today on the San Francisco elevator shaft murder mystery is because San Francisco passes itself off as a compassionate city, which it isn't. It's the meanest city I've ever lived in. It also tries to pass itself off as a laissez-faire city, which is do as you will, but it isn't. It's a city of anarchism. If they can get away with covering up a murder like this, they can get away with anything, which is, of course, what they do all the time. I have nothing to gain by talking about this. I have everything to lose by talking about it. But it keeps bothering me because this looks like a murder to me. And I would ask you, if you're listening to the show around America, to start writing to the FBI and demand that they investigate this elevator shaft murder mystery in San Francisco. Take it out of the hands of the mayor of San Francisco. Take it out of the local office and put it into the federal office. Now, it's interesting to me that the mayor of the city, Gavin Newsom, wants to be governor. And it's also interesting to me that Governor Jerry Brown, Attorney General Jerry Brown, wants to be governor. They're both very liberal. I would ask Attorney General Jerry Brown to have his office step in and take this case away from the mayor. And the reason I'm doing that is because he's going to run against Newsom. And if he could break this case and prove that Newsom either ignored this or someone in his inner circle ignored this or covered it up, Brown will win for the governorship and truth will win out. If, on the other hand, the attorney general won't touch it, it means that this cover-up goes much farther than this city. Now, I told you I have a mystery guest, someone who's dealt with murder mysteries for a long time on both sides of the aisle. Daniel Horowitz, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Now, Daniel, I have a question to ask you. In your years as a criminal defense attorney, you've dealt with murder cases?
I have handled probably 60, 70 murder cases.
All right, fine. So I'm in the hands of a real expert here. Daniel, you and I disagree politically on many things. We agree with some things politically, but this bothers both of us. Why does it bother you?
Bothers me, first of all, because I don't want it to be a murder. It's too ugly. The implications are too awful to think about. But it bothers me because this young man was so courageous in his life. He was a doctor. He was a great fighter for the state of Israel. He fought for a lot of causes you and I don't believe in. But he was a good man, and his life should not be taken. And then there's just silence in the world about what happened.
Do you believe he was murdered, or do you believe it was an accident?
I started by hoping it was an accident. I heard your interview with Inspector Krimsky. But the more I look at it, Michael, there are more things that not only bother me, but bother the investigators, the police officers who I know, who I've talked to about this. Everybody who looks at it finds problems with the investigation, and it looks more and more like murder, Michael.
All right. This morning, did you read the autopsy report yourself?
Yes, I have. I have it right here.
Okay. And what did you find in the autopsy report that the local newspapers are not reporting?
Well, I'm finding, first of all, a history of how he arrived at the building and got to the elevators, which is very frightening. But let me just go right to what's bothering me the most. Your point about him not pushing the help button, that was the first thing that made me concerned. I heard that on your show the other day. The autopsy report shows, Michael, that he had a pen in his left hand. How do you fall six stories, break every bone in every major bone in your leg, break the large bone from your shoulder to your elbow, and still hold on to...
Dan, are you there? Did I lose you? I think we lost Daniel. Oh, what a shame. Well, he said, how do you fall six stories, break every major bone in your body, break your arm and still hold on to a pen? We're going to go back to Daniel Horowitz in a minute on the Savage Nation. I would only hope that the connection is a little better this time. In New York City on WOR, you see, this is no longer a local story. The cat is out of the bag. In New York, WOR, Jimmy, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Roughly a year ago in San Francisco, there was a Chinese-American community leader who was doing a lot of good work, and the Chinese communists were doing a lot of operations to take control of the Chinese-American communities. This man opposed them, and he was murdered. And some of the local police were upset about this as a cover-up. The man's name is Mr. Leung. I'm not sure of the spelling. It's something like L-E-O-U-N-G. And those of us who knew of him and knew of his work believe he was murdered. A man gets threatened. Then some people push him in his apartment, beat him up, murder him, don't rob anything. The man had no criminal connections. And then for San Francisco to say that he was involved in some kind of crime and this is what the criminal, criminal thing that causes death, this is scary. In other words, it's political correctness now in murder investigations.
Oh, my God. That's what I'm getting at, Jimmy. If this fake liberal city can cover up a murder like this, what can they do next? Let's go back to Daniel Horowitz. Thanks, Jimmy. Daniel, you said he fell eight floors, broke his arms and all his bones, and a pen was found in his hand. Are you alleging that they put the pen in his hand, whoever killed him?
No, I don't think so. It seems to me, if this is a murder, and I can't come up with a non-murder scenario for this, but how about this? He used the pen to fight off his attackers. They hit him on the head, knock him out, he dies, and then with rigor mortis, his hand freezes up on the pen.
Then was there any blood? Was there any blood on that pen? Any DNA on the pen?
Let's put it this way: our investigation is still continuing. I've got a lot of people in the field trying to find out.
Where is the pen? Is the pen still in the evidence room?
It should still be in the evidence room. It's still.
Well, you know, and I know that with the San Francisco Miss Examiner at stake, that pen is already history. It's in the bay.
Well, the big problem we've got is Heather Fong. She took Inspector Krimsky off this case, and when she did that, the investigation essentially was over. We've been waiting now for weeks for the medical examiner to finish, but things like you just mentioned, looking at the pen, is there blood on it?
She took the original inspector off the case? Why?
I can't say, Michael. I know why. I can't say, but...
So he's been turned into the fall guy for doing his job.
This was a man who, on your show, thought that it was an accident, but he was willing to keep an open mind, and he was not finishing the investigation. He had more to do. Next thing you know, that's all I'm going to say, he's gone. He's put on some remote detail, and he's one of the best inspectors in that department.
So I guess the mayor can show that he really believes in the truth and in law by restoring him to his job, correct?
If the mayor really cared about the police, he would restore Krimsky to this case, and he would fix a lot of the things that Heather Fang has done to the rank-and-file office.
Well, the next time I run into the good mayor in one of his late-night jaunts around North Beach, I'll ask him why he is not more activist involved in this case, more actively involved in the case. But let's, again, open up the story. Remember, Daniel, we're talking to America right now. They claim that the elevator had multiple functioning defects. In the reading of the police report, doesn't it say that Dr. Kleeman arrived at the building, the door was locked at a certain time, and he picked up his cell phone and called someone to let him in the building?
Right. Now, this is very strange. Let me go through the timeline. 7:53 p.m. There is no guard on duty, and there was supposed to be. And that guard should have let him in and signed him in.
Wait. There was no guard on duty, and there was supposed to be. Reminds me of the scene in The Godfather when Michael arrives at the hospital and the guards are off, was suddenly off duty.
Right. It's funny. I was thinking the same thing, and it's very chilling in the context of this death, yes. And it goes from there. It gets a little bit stranger. He gets on his cell phone, and as he's on his cell phone, some person comes to the door, uses an electronic key, and lets him in. But that's not the person he was calling, because as he's being let in, he's still on the cell phone. So we have to find out, and I'm in the process of doing this, who did he call, who let him in?
Yeah, aren't there cell phone records that could tell us who the last call was made to?
Yeah, now we don't have those. Those have not been released publicly. If we can find this information out, I'll let you know what it is, and we can keep our analysis going. But the interesting thing is, what happens next is that he goes to the elevator, and then the camera turns off because it's a motion-activated sensor. A few minutes later...
Wait a minute. He comes through the lobby. The camera's still on, showing him in the lobby?
Yeah, the camera will run for probably 15 seconds after it's triggered by motion.
Okay, so he's standing in front of the elevator door and the camera goes blank?
Yeah, which is normal. I mean, they want to save money on recording. I mean, they should run it 24 hours, but that's old.
All right, so wait a minute. So there's nothing unusual about the camera going blank?
No, but then about 4 minutes later, the camera starts running again. Now, the camera shows that he's no longer at the elevator, but it does not show who triggered the camera to turn on.
Right? Oh, my God. So there was a motion that triggered the camera, but it's not the doctor. Someone else did.
Yeah, and we don't know who. And then
oh, my God.
Thing is, the teacher said that this class starts normally from 7:30 until 8 o'clock, and it was canceled that day. That raises two issues. Do classes really start that vaguely in time? Usually they don't. And two, why was he there if the class was canceled? So we have
well, the first question I asked, Dan, was how come he went there if it was canceled? Who is it who sent out the emails or made the calls to the class members and said, class canceled? Wouldn't you go to that person first and say, did you contact Dr. Kleeman? Prove that you called him and said, don't come that night, the class is canceled. Why didn't they do that?
I know, there's so many unanswered questions. When I add this all up, what I get is this. He shows up and the building is empty like The Godfather. Somebody lets him in. He goes in and then there's some motion we don't know about. The elevator supposedly gets stuck, but he doesn't push the help button, which you pointed out is ridiculous. They then claim that he opens the door and jumps out of the elevator wearing a 20-pound backpack and clutching a pen in his hand. Nobody jumps out of an elevator that way. They throw their backpack down and then they put the pen away. Then he hits the carpet in the hallway and falls backward and still holds the pen, doesn't try to catch himself, falls all the way down, breaks all the major bones in his body, and still holds the pen. It doesn't make sense.
Daniel, how many murder cases have you been involved in?
I've been probably 60, 70 murder cases.
All right, you said that at the beginning. I'm reaffirming. I'm speaking with a criminal defense attorney, one of the top in the world, Daniel Horowitz, who helped me with my fight against CAIR, who's been noticeably silent lately, by the way. Apparently, the FBI dropped them from diversity training recently, once it came out that one of their esteemed honorees cut his wife's head off, allegedly, because she went to the movies or something. I don't really know why. But, Daniel, you said that there are police who are actively upset by this report?
Oh, yeah. You you know, I have a lot of people. Of course, the San Francisco police officers love you. If you go to North Beach with Michael Savage, the police come up to him all the time. Well, I have less friends than that, but I have some in the department, and I talk to them and in other departments, and they all say this needs more investigation, and they all say that Krimsky's a great officer and that if he was on it, we'd get to the bottom of it.
Okay, so we're going to appeal to Mayor Newsom to put Detective Krimsky back on the job, to restore him, take him off the traffic detail. He was put there by Heather Fung to get him off the case. This is an outrage at every level, Daniel. And right now it's in your hands and the hands of others, I take it. You're not alone in this.
Not alone in this, and we're pushing forward, and we'll keep telling you what's going on.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, you just got it from the expert's mouth. The elevator shaft murder mystery will continue. As we know more, we will let you know more. Daniel, God bless you for seeking the truth.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much. It is 47 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Savage Nation out of San Francisco. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Nobody here. What happened to the guards?
Your father just had too many visitors. They interfered with hospital service. The police made them leave about 10 minutes ago.
You and I are going to move my father to another room. Now, can you disconnect those two so we can move the bed out?
That's out of the question.
You know my father. Man,
all right,
and
you get the picture. I can't imagine a country that considers itself so involved in mystery and murder. CSI is a popular show. San Francisco thinks it's so sophisticated. They're more sophisticated than Mount Etna. They're sharper than everyone on earth. And here is a story staring them in the face, and they ignore it. Here is an outrage against a human being, and they ignore it. Instead, they're concerned about bicyclists' rights, for example. This is why I have no faith in liberals or liberalism. I think they're all phonies. San Francisco, KNEW. Mario, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I'm an elevator mechanic from the San Francisco area, and to shed a little more light on the door operation, here in California, it's a lot stricter than even back in Chicago. There's no hole or special tool, and there's actually a special retainer to make sure that you can't open those elevator doors if they get stopped in the middle of the floor because people fall back into the hoistway like that.
So you're saying it's virtually impossible for him to have pried the doors open from the inside?
I've seen firemen use a huge pry bar to try to rip some of those doors open. Unless you have the know-how and the special tools to get the door open, it is almost impossible.
Really? Well, but the state medical examiner says he opened it with a pen.
Yeah, you'd need both hands, and you'd have to have your leg on the wall.
Wait a minute. Here's another person who should be investigated by the FBI, in my opinion. Listen to this. Cal OSHA so-called investigator Jennifer Stafford is quoted as saying, quote, "When the inner door was forced to open, then the outer door could be easily opened." So this wonderful Cal OSHA investigator, who obviously got her degree at San Francisco State in idiot studies, says that he opened the door with a pen?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, even the older doors before the newer stuff came in with the special locks and stuff, you still would have to pry them open with both hands as hard as you could. You wouldn't have a pen in your hand when you're trying to pry those doors open, that's for sure.
Well, how come they didn't ask any elevator inspector such as yourself to put his two cents into the opinion?
Well, from what I understand, they did an investigation on that, and all the elevator equipment came up in working order and sound, so I don't know how that guy would have got out.
And if a man gets stuck in an elevator, doesn't he normally press the call button that links to the operator and the alarm bell?
Yeah, because you would have a hard time even trying to open the doors, so you would have to call somebody.
Well, there was no evidence that he even touched the bell, and yet they're saying it was an accident. The doctor, although he was smart enough to be a doctor, he wasn't smart enough to not try to climb out of an elevator, and apparently he was so strong he was able to tear the doors open with his own hands and a little ballpoint pen.
Yeah, well, he must have been on gamma rays like the Hulk or something.
Well, that's San Francisco. You know, anything's possible here, Mario. If you believe it, it can happen. Just as if you can believe a murder didn't happen, it goes away. Like, I think that this case is going to haunt Gavin Newsom all the way to the governorship. Unless this case is resolved, meaning unless he puts Inspector Kleeman back on this case, I think this is going to haunt him all the way through his campaign. Because it's out of my hands at this point. Once Daniel Horowitz is on it and others, and I don't know who they may be, this is going to haunt the mayor unless he does the right thing. Unless he restores this detective to his job and finds out who fired him, he is not going to be governor. And I'm appealing to Attorney General Jerry Brown, who has the power to put state investigators on this case, to reopen this case and prove to the people you care about the truth. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Houston, Texas, on another topic. Daniel, welcome to the Savage Nation.
God bless you, Michael Savage. When I heard you talk about Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Chisani, his five children, and his beautiful wife, I immediately got out my checkbook and wrote a check for $150 to the organization, the TMLC, and I did that in honor of my cousin, Eric Eckhart. He's a United States Special Forces, currently in Iraq, and my deceased grandfather, who flew in 91 missions, shot down 16 planes, and was recognized as an ace in the United States Army Air Corps.
Wait, what was your grandfather's name?
Andrew Curry Sorrell, Jr.
Well, you're very, very lucky to have such great heritage, and you're also a man who did the right thing here. I mean, you understand what I'm doing, Daniel, for Chisani. It's not about me anymore. It never was. I'm not looking to gain any brownie points for it. This is one of the greatest outrages I've ever seen in my life. So I've always tried to help the falsely accused and the underdog. And that's truly, you know, go to the elevator story. I don't know the man. Politically, I don't know the man. I'm sure I disagree with him politically on virtually everything. But I'm convinced he was murdered. And I don't want to see a murder like this go uninvestigated for one reason. It makes everybody else less safe in this city. You understand that, don't you?
Yes, sir.
And if we can't have justice in San Francisco, how in the world can we have justice anywhere on earth? God bless you and your family, and thanks for sending that money to the Chisani Defense Fund, care of the Thomas More Law Center. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Dragnet.
It is the Savage Nation, blah, blah, blah. And here we are. Elevator shaft murder mystery continues. In the last hour, we had criminal defense attorney Dan Horowitz on the show, who's handled 50 to 60 murder investigations in his life. And he says this case stinks. It's a cover-up from top to bottom. We have appealed to governor, to Mayor Gavin Newsom, to reappoint the detective who was suspiciously withdrawn from the case after appearing on the show. We have appealed to Mayor Newsom to investigate this case thoroughly. We have appealed to Attorney General Jerry Brown to put the state investigative team on this. Something is wrong with the story. And yesterday on MichaelSavage.com, we talked about horses being stolen and stripped of their flesh and eaten in South Florida. I know you can't believe it. It sounds like it's too bizarre to be true. But because of the lowlifes that are being led into this country, I know Nancy Pelosi calls illegal immigrants great, great, very, very patriotic. And some of them may be. The problem is they're here illegally and they're not citizens. But we're getting some of the lowest of the low of the world coming into this country, and they're bringing their degenerate lifestyles with them, as exemplified by the fact that many of them like horse meat, and they are having low-life criminals go on to farms in Florida, stealing horses and stripping them of their flesh in the middle of the night, and killing the horse, stripping them of flesh in order to eat the horses. I mean, this is what's going on in your country. We have gone from being a melting pot to becoming a chamber pot. I first said that when I started in radio 15 years ago. I am the son of an immigrant, but don't tell me that every immigrant is the same. And don't tell me every country of origin is the same. And don't tell me that the wave of immigrants we've had over the last 10 or 15 years is the same as those who brought you here. If you say so, you're crazy. And in Florida, when I was down there, I met a wonderful, wonderful group called HelpTheHorses.com. Wonderful group. And these people are trying to save the horses from those animals down there who are killing them. Go to their website. I don't get a nickel out of it. HelpTheHorses.com. Try to help them. We are. I am, personally. I believe in the underdog, and I believe in helping animals. 1-800-449-8255. We're also talking about the strange case of Christopher Dodd. That's right, the strange Christopher Dodd. But I would say it's in his DNA, and he can't help himself. And the reason I say that, now, Chris Dodd is the man who said that he did not have anything to do with the AIG bonuses and writing language in at the last minute that prohibited the return of the bonuses. He said he didn't. Now he said he did. He said he did amend the bailout bill. So we don't know when he was lying. We don't know when he was lying when he said he didn't or when he was lying when he said he did. But we do know this, that he had a father who was also a senator for Connecticut, the wonderful Thomas Dodd, who was eventually censored by the U.S. Senate because he used campaign funds for personal purposes. The senior Dodd also was hired by Guatemalan dictator Carlos Castillo Armas to lobby the U.S. government, and as a result of Dodd's efforts, Guatemala got millions of dollars in U.S. aid. And don't forget this, in the 1960s, Chris Dodd's dad took a series of Nazi-era gun control laws, had them translated into English, and inserted them into the Gun Control Act of 1968. There's liberalism for you. Watch out. Watch out for people who say they're doing good, because they're usually doing very well indeed for themselves. That's all I can say. If you'd like to talk about this or any other topic, this is the place to do it. There are many, many other stories on many websites in the news. The only thing I really don't want to talk about is Obama going on a TV show tonight. I could care less. To me, it's an example of who Obama really is. The guy is an imposter. He's a facile guy. He belongs on a Tonight Show. In fact, my only hope is that he does so well that they offer him a fill-in gig, and he quits the presidency and decides to make a real living. Binghamton, New York. Maria, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to make a point. As much as I don't like the way the AIG is going to get their big bonuses, I do think that it's extremely scary that the bill that passed, they could actually tax 90% of their bonuses. If they're
I agree with you. That bill is terrifying. That means that this gang of criminals called Congress can say, let's tax talk show hosts who are conservative to 99% of their income. That's totally illegal. They can't do this. It's absolutely illegal to do this. It's impossible to believe that we live in a country where all people are equal.
I can't imagine.
How can you select one class of people and put a tax on them? This could be appealed to the Supreme Court and be overturned, by the way.
I would hope they would.
It's unconstitutional. It's unbelievable. I mean, they shouldn't get the bonuses, but there's got to be an administrative way to do it other than taxation. It's very, very, very worrisome to permit this gang of crooks to target a particular class of people and put a tax on them alone. Thank you for the call. Totally agree with you on that. Totally agree with you on that. Florida, Bruce, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, thank you for taking my call. I have one question that amongst many on this elevator business that really stands out. Now, if there was motion detector cameras showing the victim coming in through the lobby to the elevator door, Did it pick up whatever person it was going through the lobby to open the front door?
Attorney Horowitz says no.
Well, that sure is strange.
Yes, it's very strange. Also, he approaches the building. The door is locked. He picks up a cell phone to call someone. And while he's on the cell phone, an unseen individual who knows how to bypass the camera's vision comes and puts a swiper card and lets him in. Who was that person who let him in?
Yeah, the whole investigation conclusion stinks, and I hope he gets rid of this.
Well, but the police chief threw the investigator off the case. Do you know that?
Yeah, I heard the interview with Horowitz. I mean, it's just it's like would make a terrific mystery novel.
Yes, and I'm appealing to screenwriters listening to this show. I'm appealing to investigators listening to this show. I'm appealing to FBI agents listening to this show to intervene in San Francisco and take this case and run with it. But then again, I don't have any listenership. I'm sure it won't happen. They're only interested in Jay Leno, who reads scripts written for him by men in the back room. In other words, they only go on shows that are written for them. They're not interested in a show that's listened to by 8 to 10 million people a week. You don't exist. Your vote doesn't count. The Republicans don't care about you either, so don't expect anything to change. That's the beauty of this show. I have a soundbite of Senator Chris Dodd discussing what happened during the stimulus package. Let's hear clip one.
We wrote the language in the bill to deal with bonuses, golden parachutes, excessive compensation, executive compensation. That was adopted unanimously by the United States Senate in the stimulus bill. That's what I would have liked to have seen maintained in the bill. But for that language, there would have been no language in the bill to deal with any of this at all, including language that allowed them to reach back.
Do you know what he just said? Because I don't. I'm a fairly intelligent man. I have no idea what Senator Chris Dodd, D. Connecticut, just said. Now let's hear clip three.
The modification occurred. It was at their suggestion. We wrote it together at the time, obviously, a month and a half ago. But again, I want to make the point. There were many who were highly critical of the Dodd Amendment on executive compensation, excessive compensation. I find it ironic that the very people who were critical of me putting that bill in a month and a half ago are now being critical, saying we went too far.
Do you know what he's talking about? Now, was he lying when he said that or when he says this in clip four?
As many know, the administration was, among others, was not happy with the language, wanted some modifications to it. They came to us, our staff, and asked for changes. And the changes at the time did not seem that obnoxious or onerous. None of us had. I didn't certainly have any idea about AIG.
You have any idea what Chris Dodd just said? I guess the people of Connecticut are on drugs because he's been a senator there as long as the, long before the gambling casinos were put in there on Indian reservations. Let's see, what else do we have? God, I'm so tired of AIG. I'm so tired of it. As far as I'm concerned, I don't know what they're talking about. Jeff Zucker defends far-left tilt of MSNBC. Jeff Zucker is a putz. Jeff Zucker is a schmuck. Jeff Zucker is the kind of red diaper dopa baby who, were it not for the changing winds of politics in America, he'd be running a diaper service in Boca Raton. Listen to clip 16.
The viewership on MSNBC has remained incredibly strong, and in prime time on a nightly basis.
All right, shut your mouth. Just shut up. It's because of people like you that America's sinking into the quicksand. It's because of red diaper dopa babies like Jeff Zucker of NBC that a once great network has descended into the sewer. It is because of men like Jeff Zucker that a decent cable channel, MSNBC, has become MSLGBT all the time. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transsexual programming. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yeah, well, we're talking about, you know, national, international, local. Here's the police blotter from San Francisco. Naked dancer reappears. At 8:20 p.m. March 14th, officers responded to the 900 block of Columbus Avenue after receiving a call that a man was trespassing inside a cafe. That's kind of an oxymoron. The man had a history of harassing customers, taking off his clothes and dancing. We do not know if he'll be invited on the Jay Leno show, but we're waiting to see. I mean, it could be a real discovery. He was arrested on suspicion of public intoxication, assault, and trespassing. I think he should go to work for the mayor. He's perfect to go to work for the mayor's office. San Diego, Pat, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hey, Michael, I've been trying to call you for such a long time. I'm so excited to be on the air right now. But what's the problem? Obama's doing such a great job. He's going to turn everything around for us right now.
All right, Pat, you're doing this in falsetto. You're not going to get me upset. So what else? Why don't you go into a regular voice and say what you really mean?
Well, I mean, what's wrong with the bailout program right now? I mean,
it's excellent. No, he has saved the world. That's why he's able to go on television tonight.
Well,
because he can relax. Now that he's saved the economy and saved the world, he can go on television tonight.
Well, that's what he needs to do.
I don't like falsetto voices. I mean, it's too much. It's too much. People try to set me up with this. In an online Spanish language chat room, people from all over the East Coast seek tips on how to get driver's licenses in Maryland, even though they don't live there. Businesses run classified ads in Spanish language publications in Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, urging, quote, undocumented Hispanic friends, unquote, to take advantage of the opportunity to get Maryland ID without having to prove they're in the country legally. In one case, Maryland motor vehicle officials say 68 different people applying for licenses and IDs gave the same address for an 800-square-foot home in Baltimore. Isn't that the home of a vice president? Maryland is one of just four states where people don't have to prove their legal U.S. residence to get driver's licenses. Well, I think they should go to work for the Pelosi administration. In fact, she said that they're very, very patriotic, and I think that they're more patriotic than the ICE officers, frankly. I think that the solution here is for the Obama administration to hire only illegal aliens in the Border Patrol and fire all the Border Patrol agents and actually try them for doing their job, because that's what they're doing to the U.S. Marine Corps for doing their job in Iraq. You know, Jim in New York on WOR, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I'm very upset. I earn a bonus from one of these companies that receive TARP funds, and it's nowhere near $1 million. I have very little to do with the financial part of the industry. I work with computers and design systems, and this law that they passed, taxing me at 90% if it gets passed through the Senate, is unbelievable.
I agree with you, and I think it's unconstitutional, and I believe a good attorney can sue the government and win. There is no way you can selectively pick out a select group of people and put a tax only on them. It's absolutely unconstitutional.
Yeah, and the thing is, there's tens of thousands of people that work in the back office of these firms that are all types of jobs, accountants and computer people and computer programmers that are senior people. Do these senators think that these firms run themselves, but everybody makes $20,000 a year as a genius? It's unbelievable.
Congressional Democrats worked on legislation designed to recoup most of or all of the $165 million bonus money by exposing it to new taxes. A 90% tax would apply to bonus money paid to employees earning more than $250,000 at firms that have received more than $5 billion in federal bailout funds. So you're one of those people.
Yes, and I'm no crook, and I'm not an AIG senior guy, and I never traded a bond or a stock, or I have nothing to do with any of that. But I'm in that company that received that money, and now I'm swept away with all the crooks. It's unbelievable.
Well, again, I want to repeat, Jim, this is illegal. In my opinion, I'm not a lawyer or a tax accountant. I believe that you should group together with a bunch of people and sue Chris Dodd and or Bonnie Frank and or anyone else who's targeted you for unfair taxation. And there's no way the Supreme Court will uphold this. It's impossible. You agree with me or not?
I would agree that it certainly seems unconstitutional, and I'm hoping the Senate puts some balance into it.
No, but listen, Jim, this is a nation of laws. Nothing can be done from a legislative point of view that is not legal, not written into law. But any law that is written can be challenged. People challenge IRS rulings every day of the week, and they win. You know that, Jim, don't you?
Yes.
All right. So if you can challenge the IRS and win, then you can challenge Bonnie Frank and win. Because if they can tax you today, they can tax TV executives tomorrow. They can tax conservative talk radio hosts the next day. They can tax plumbers the next day. They can tax white construction workers, but not Hispanic construction workers. It is totally illegal, in my opinion.
Savage.
Okay, mark this down, and not on ice. Mark it down in something solid, because my prediction is that there's going to be a lawsuit against the government by the people who are receiving the bonuses, and they're going to win. Not because they should get the bonuses, but because this method that Congress is using to tax them at a 90% rate, which is separate from anyone else's taxation rate, indicates that it's, you know, it's extra, it's outside the constitutional law, and it will not be upheld at the Supreme Court, and it's not going to work. It just shows you what morons are running the government. Citigroup may spend $10 million for executive suite, came out minutes ago. Citigroup Inc. plans to spend $10 million on new offices for Chief Executive Officer Vikram Pandit and his lieutenants after the U.S. government injected $45 billion of cash into the bank. Affidavits filed with the New York Department of Buildings show Citigroup expects to pay at least $3.2 million for basic construction such as wall removal, plumbing, and fire safety. By the time architects' fees and expenses such as furniture are added, the tally for the office at the bank's Park Avenue headquarters will be at least three times as high, according to someone familiar with the project. Citigroup said the project will help it save money over time. I guess Pandit's butt, if it's comfortable enough, Vikram Pandit's butt, if it feels comfortable, it somehow makes money. I don't know. Pandit, criticized by lawmakers over Citigroup's use of U.S. bailout capital, canceled an order for a company jet in January and told Congress on February 11th, quote, "I get the new reality, and I'll make sure Citi gets it as well," close quote. You rob a library book, you go to jail for 90 days. You don't return three library books, the tax squad will come through your bedroom window. Citigroup said in a statement that the construction is part of a global space-saving initiative. That's like Chris Dodd saying he didn't write the law, then he said he did write the law. Someone else wrote the law, but he supervised the unwriting of the law. The bank plans to reduce its office space worldwide by more than 10 million square feet, then blah, 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 blah. 52,000 jobs, Sub-Zero fridge. Oh, he's buying a Sub-Zero fridge? Wait a minute. Plans and instructions for the bank's contractors on file with the city specify the installation of at least one Sub-Zero Inc. refrigerator and ice maker in the renovated space, along with premium-grade millwork and Matico Inc. Safety Shield 800 blast-proof window film. Well, anyway, you get the picture. But wait a minute. If you think it's an outrage that Citigroup is spending $10 million, hold on. So-called Senator Robert Menendez, a so-called New Jersey Democrat, and a member of the so-called Senate Banking Committee said, maybe there's some rational argument for the remodeling. Oh. Well, as they say in certain books I'm reading, the businessmen like this don't need the politicians. The politicians need these businessmen. Do you understand what that means now? During the age of the Godfather, they had to buy politicians. They don't have to buy them anymore. They own them outright. They're not even leased anymore. They're owned for a life, a lifetime. New York City, WR. Larry, welcome to the program.
Michael, I'm just very curious. The doctor that fell down the elevator shaft, isn't it a little strange that his partner slash lover was also in the same class but didn't appear that evening at the school?
Well, I would like to know who he called when he was trying to get in the building. What's that cell phone number? Number two, if I understand security systems at all, someone swiped the door to let him in and wasn't seen on the camera. Every card has a code on it, and it should show in the computer who owned that card, don't you think, Larry?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, apparently the police chief doesn't have these basic questions in her mind, so she fired the detective who was working on the case thinking that it would go away, Larry.
I understand that. And the first person she should have really questioned would have been his partner.
You mean the boyfriend, the boyfriend that he met in the Arab class?
Absolutely.
Well, I'm sure that they did. After all, this is the SFPD, and you know that they wouldn't let a stone go unturned, or shall I say they wouldn't go unturned without being stoned.
Certainly wouldn't move the stone.
Yeah, they certainly wouldn't move a stone. I think they'd probably get stoned before they would turn a stone. Thanks for the call. Oh, no, no, this is now a snowball. I just got four emails from people who are lawyers who are going to make sure this investigation goes on, and they're going to find out why Heather Fung fired Detective Krimsky. They're going to find out why this has been swept under the rug. They're going to find out how high this goes up and why, oh, why, oh, why the mayor is looking the other way. And they said that they're going to pursue this every time Mayor Newsom appears at a fundraiser to try and run for the governorship. They're going to be there asking about this elevator death until he steps in and does something. That's all. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Missouri, Brian, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. I would just like to, in a way, say maybe we can, conservatives can declare a small victory in regards to this the stimulus package. I say that because, I mean, it's been like a month or 5 weeks now, and it's already unraveling before our eyes, and I think we're going to have the I told you so. We already have it. I remember that Friday very well.
But Barack the Great is not finished. He now wants to legalize illegal aliens. That'll cost probably $5 trillion. And now he wants a climate plan that could cost $2 trillion. The man is patently insane, by the way. I actually think Obama's crazy.
Crazy?
Hasn't anybody told him that we're going bankrupt?
Obviously not.
Well, that's why he's talking to Jay Leno tonight. Birds of a feather and all that. Thanks for the call. How is this possible that he's getting away with this? How is this possible? How could this man tax Americans like this? How could the man put out a climate plan for a problem that doesn't exist, which is global warming? How could he plan to spend $2 trillion that will be put on to the additional money, the trillions of dollars he's already spending? How is this possible? How in the world can this man get away with this? Because we're living in a dictatorship. Because there is no longer a Republican Party. With men like Arlen Specter, the Republican Party was undermined from within. In fact, Arlen Specter said he may leave the party. Arlen Specter, the turncoat backstabber, is saying he may leave the GOP. I only wish he leaves politics altogether. What would be the right punishment for Arlen Specter in the next life? What would be the right punishment when he goes before God for what he did during his tenure as a fake Republican? What about the fact, I talk about the elevator murder mystery. You think this is the only one that ever happened? Let's go back to Arlen Specter when he was a wee lad, when he was a fresh district attorney in Philadelphia, and a Democrat at that. There was a unicorn murder. Does anyone remember the unicorn murder? If anyone can name the person who committed the murder, and anyone can name the victim of the murder, and anyone can tell me what Arlen Specter did to make sure that the murderer escaped America and American justice, you will win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Now, having said that Arlen Specter, while a DA, a Democrat, helped a murderer escape America and flee to Sweden, and yet he still became a senator and it never haunted him, shows you just what to expect in American politics today. It just shows you what's going on. It shows you how an imposter like Barack Obama can become president and keep coming up with one harebrained radical Marxist scheme after another and get away with it. It shows you that there is no government of the people, by the people, and for the people. It's a government of the sheeple, by the sheeple, and for the sheeple. Is it? I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is the most corrupt administration in the history of this fair republic. This just came out minutes ago. While our president is fiddling, while Rome burns on a television show, it just came out that Obama administration's special envoy, Richard Holbrooke, was on the AIG Inc. board of directors in early 08 when the insurance company locked in the bonuses, now stoking national outrage. Holbrooke, a veteran diplomat who was now the administration's point man on Pakistan and Afghanistan, served on the board of AIG between 01 and 08. I want to remind you that it was Holbrooke who orchestrated the bombing of Serbia. It was Holbrooke who stood there laughing with Jamie Gorelick and Madeleine Albright while the nation of Serbia was cut to ribbons by U.S. Air Force jets repainted under NATO markings in order to make the world safe for the Kosovo Albanians, in order to make Europe more easily penetrated by radical Islam. Holbrooke was in charge for Bill Clinton. The corruption is beyond comprehension. Let me repeat again. Obama administration envoy Richard Holbrooke was on the AIG board of directors in early 08 when the insurance company locked in the bonuses, now stoking national outrage. This man is now Obama's point man on Pakistan and Afghanistan. The only question is, how much more can this country take? This is the most corrupt, incompetent administration in American history. And if you think it's over, you're crazy. If you think it's over, you're out of your mind. He's just begun to take this country apart by the joint.
You calling on regards to the name of the person. It was Ira Einhorn.
You do. I asked you. Hold on. We have a winner here. I want to see if anyone remembers anything, because we're all shocked by this elevator murder mystery in San Francisco being swept under the rug by Police Chief Heather Fong and the Mayor Newsom, and the San Francisco Medical Miss Examiner. But I was saying, about 30 years ago, a young woman was butchered, disappeared, was put in a trunk, and Arlen Specter helped the murderer escape American justice for over 15 or 20 years. Now, who was the killer?
Ira Einhorn. He escaped to France. I think he lived there for about a period of about 10 to 15 years.
Right, and they try, and who was the girl who was killed?
I think last name was Reiner. I'm not exactly sure, but I do remember.
Marcos, are you aware of the fact that this Ira Einhorn, who killed his girlfriend, was the founder of the holiday called Earth Day?
No, it wasn't.
In other words, he was one of the first Earth Day con men. He came before Al Gore. He was a con man from top to bottom. He created Earth Day, which is a communist fake holiday. And this phony environmentalist took his girlfriend, his beautiful girlfriend, and butchered her and put her in a trunk and hid her in his closet. And it was Arlen Specter who helped him escape U.S. justice. But you know, it was a district attorney, a woman in Philadelphia, who spent her entire life saying she would bring him back to American justice, and she did. Remember that? That story is an amazing one. Her name was Lynn something. Great, great, the DA. I wish she was in San Francisco. Maybe we'd have justice here. Marcos, I'm sending you a free copy of my autobiography, Psychological Nudity. Please stay on the line. See, people do remember. Obama tells Leno he was stunned by AIG bonuses. I guess this was written for him by the same writers who write for Jay Leno. He was stunned, shocked about it. I was just shocked about this moral and ethical problem. Just shocked. I would say Jay Leno is the least funny man I've ever seen in the history of American television. I don't know what, I don't know, I've never, 5 minutes you watch the guy, you say, how could anyone watch it? Her name was Holly Maddox, by the way. Thank you. I don't want her to, you know, be forgotten. Her family was heartbroken over this. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There's plenty of callers. Plenty of callers, but I don't want to take it anymore. You want to talk about stocks and bonds? You want to talk about the government taxing bonuses? It's an illegal tax, by the way. I mean, we all want to see the guys who broke the company give back the bonuses. They don't deserve it. But you don't do it this way. It's illegal. Because if you let Congress target, you know, a special class of people with a special tax, that means you could be next. And that's why it's unconstitutional. It will never, ever hold up in a lawsuit. Never in a million years. Here's a couple of stories from MichaelSavage.com, from the AP. A so-called judge, Gerald Bruce, said that Abu Ghraib detainees can sue a Virginia contractor. You hear this? That would be like saying Gestapo agents who were quizzed by U.S. Army intelligence in World War II, Gestapo agents can then sue the U.S. Army after World War II. That's U.S. District so-called Judge Gerald Bruce through a looking glass. From the Associated Press, Sarah Jane Olson not allowed to do interviews, husband says. Ugh, God, take a look at that face on her. Savage credited with making difference in Haditha case from WorldNet Daily. Savage credited with making difference in Haditha case. That's true. Let's make sure that the government doesn't prosecute and persecute him anymore. My editorial is Obama's AIG bonus. It's up on the top right of the website. From the Charleston Post, principals at worst schools to receive bonuses. From the Associated Press, Attorney General Eric Holder signaled a change on medical marijuana policy. Okay. House passes 90% tax for AIG bonuses. That's funny coming from Charles Rangel, himself a tax dodger. GOP lawmakers blast probe of Sheriff Joe. Good luck. 10 Republican congressmen argue that a civil rights investigation of Sheriff Joe could have a chilling effect on other state and local police. That's the object here. This government is a government owned lock, stock, and barrel by illegal aliens and other illegals. Obama wants citizenship for illegal aliens. He said he wants citizenship for law-abiding illegals. Now, that's not crazy. How can you be a law-abiding illegal alien? You can't be a law-abiding illegal alien. You broke the law. From the London Daily Mail, socialized medicine has brought Britain a third-world hospital. In this hospital, thirsty patients drank out of flower vases, while others screamed in pain and fell out of bed. You hear this? This is a socialized hospital in England. A study out of the UPI says wages rose after immigration raids. Wages and employment increased for legal workers after ICE raids on six Swift and Company meatpacking plants in several U.S. states in 06. In other words, now you understand why the pimps in government want more illegals in the country. It's to pay back their paymasters who own these packing plants and these hotel chains. They don't want American workers to get paid real wages. They want poor illegal aliens to be exploited at subminimal wages so that the pigs who own the factories can make even more money and funnel some of it to them. Ladies and gentlemen, we have become a third world nation under Barack Hussein Obama. It didn't start with him, but it's going to end with him. I agree with you. George Bush, 16 years of Clinton Bush destroyed America. Whether it can be rebuilt, I don't know. You know, it's Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. I don't know if Humpty can be restored again. I have no idea. But 16 years of the corruption of the Clintons and the Bushes have done this to America, that we have this imposter in the White House. Wages rose after immigration raids. In other words, after these packing plants were raided by ICE in 06, wages and employment increased for legal workers, which is why big business wants illegal aliens in America, so the greedy pigs at the top can continue to exploit workers and make more money. Let's see what else. I don't know how much more I can take. UN. The UN wants a world tax on oil to fund a $1 trillion green investment. You hear the gangsters now in the UN want a tax on oil to fund the so-called green investment? I want to remind you that Ira Einhorn, who killed his girlfriend, created Earth Day. There's no difference between the creation of Earth Day and Al Gore creating the idea of man-induced global warming. Let's see what else I have for you. Is there anything good? Here's something good. A head teacher who was fired for inciting Islamophobia and who was branded a racist by the school's Muslim governors in England. Now, remember what I just said. A group of Muslim fascists in England branded a teacher a racist, called her Islamophobic, and fired her. She just won £400,000 today for being forced out by these Muslim terrorists in England. There's no England anymore. Head accused of Islamophobia wins £400,000 after being forced out by Muslim fascist governors. Can you believe what they're doing to the English women over there? That's because the Englishmen are no longer existent. The Englishmen have become nothing but soccer louts who don't even defend their own women. They've given their country up to the invaders. Play There's No England Anymore. I think I've had all I can take. I'm putting my hat on. And I have another hour to go? Okay, I'll take my hat off. There's no England anymore. Look at the poor English women. They have no one left to reproduce with. The Englishmen make it with each other.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here's what I've been talking about today on the Savage Nation, the elevator murder mystery in San Francisco. The San Francisco Medical Misexaminer has determined that the death of Dr. Daniel Clayman was an accident. Sure, he fell down an elevator shaft. Sure, he was on his way to an Arabic class, which no one had told him had been canceled. And sure, he had many confrontations with Palestinian extremists over the years as a pro-Israel activist. And yes, he was found at the bottom of an elevator shaft, but the city medical examiner has called it a mishap that he forced the doors open with a pen and fell down 8 floors. Oh, sure. None of this matters in San Francisco, city of fog. More outrage over AIG. America continues to be up in arms over AIG. Well, now it turns out that Chris Dodd, on orders from the Obama administration, was the one who amended the bailout bill so that AIG could give out $160 million in bonuses, and it just so happens both Dodd and Obama were top recipients of campaign contributions from AIG. Surprised? Is this the change you asked for, all you liberal morons? Then from Dodd to God. You know, now that America has been handed over to atheist Marxists, I ask myself, has God left America, or did America leave God? And have you started to doubt the existence of God given the events of the last few months? Where is God? The Democrats are crying crocodile tears over the AIG bonuses. Obama has stated that the bonuses should be paid back. Well, if we look into how much AIG spent last year, we see a lot of political contributions to individuals such as Chris Dodd and Barack Obama. Maybe they should return the donations. Joining us now with an update on what is going on in Washington, D.C. on this is the representative from Iowa, a great guy, Congressman Stephen King, who says the bonuses aren't the only thing that need to be paid back.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate the chance to talk about this issue. You know, we've had this vote on the clawback of the bonuses that went to the AIG executives. And there's one thing going on here to try to pull that money back, and I question its constitutionality. There's another one where you see you have a lot of Democrats that are out there in a very frantic way to try to pass some legislation that'll give them some cover, because they were the ones that were involved in first passing the stimulus legislation that opened this thing up and allowed for that money to pour through to go into the pockets. So some of the people that aren't even working for AIG, some kind of retention bonus for the people that weren't retained, as well as those that are retained and those that will be leaving as soon as they cash their check. But we should take a look not just at that, but the protection that the Democrats want for passing this legislation that abrogates contracts. I get concerned about that. But it's just mistakes that are made when you rush legislation through. That legislation for the stimulus plan did not have the benefit of hearings, subcommittee markup, committee markup, or amendments on the floor in any way that allowed the collective input of the American people through their representatives in Congress, in the House and in the Senate, to weigh in on that stimulus bill. So when you pour that kind of money out there like they did and added all of those social programs and that aggressive left-wing agenda, you're bound to get some of these kind of results. And I would look back at what was being referred to as the bill was being moved, the Dodd Amendment, the Dodd language that now I'm not sure if he wants to take credit for it or whether he wants to take the blame for it. And I think the fair way to say is between the White House and Senator Chris Dodd, they changed language in the stimulus bill that set the set the stage so that they could protect these bonuses that were going to employees. And now we have a situation where Chris Dodd wants to claim, no, it really wasn't his fault. It was the White House. The White House said it wasn't their fault. It was Chris Dodd's fault. Some of those folks that are working together were working to protect those bonuses. And then we don't know where Tim Geithner was on this necessarily, although we know he was aware.
What do you feel Congress should do?
I would, Michael, put this this proposal out there. If this Congress is determined, as they have acted in the House at least, to go back and abrogate those contracts and get that bonus money back from the AIG employees, then maybe to backfill that money, we ought to ask the people that were the largest recipients of AIG campaign funds to give their money back too. The lead person on that would be Barack Obama, who collected $104,332 in the last election cycle from AIG employees and their political action committees. Who was right behind Barack Obama? Chris Dodd, Senator Dodd, at $103,900. And these are the fellows that we know that at least their staff were the ones that put the language in the bill that ultimately ended up with American tax dollars outrageously going to provide retention bonuses and supposedly performance bonuses to the executives in a company that lost $40 billion. And Fannie and Freddie lost $108 billion. I looked down through the list of contributions, and I see a number of culpable people there. And I say culpable of those who have been apologists for AIG and voting for this kind of stimulus plan. It goes beyond Chris Dodd. It includes Chuck Schumer from New York and John Kerry, Hillary Clinton. Charlie Rangel is my favorite House member that's been a big recipient of AIG money, and historically that comes to about $54,000 to Charlie Rangel. If you take a look at the contributions in 2008, just in that cycle, you'll see that Democrats drew down 75.76% of the money that came out of AIG executives and their PACs. So, yes, something needs to be done. And I think it needs to be, but also we've got to protect the sanctity of contracts. So what I would do is, if I were the CEO of AIG, is I would first draw a line across the dirt, in the dirt, just like Colonel Travis did at the Alamo. And I would say, all you stand up to that line, and now those of you that are willing to give those bonuses back for the sake of this company and the sake of the American taxpayer and the sake of the financial recovery, step across the line, bring your check with you. And those that do not cross the line, and I remind you that they figured it was almost certain death at the Alamo and everybody but one crossed that line, I think most of them would cross the line. And I'd point out also, let them do it voluntarily so we can maintain the sanctity of the contracts. And then I point out that the CEOs of AIG testified before Congress that he didn't want to divulge the names of the people who had received these bonuses. I understand that. They have been threatened, and their lives have been threatened. So does any vocal member of Congress get their life threatened from time to time. So my sympathy level isn't as high as it might be for others, and I don't think it's a good thing at all. I deplore those kind of threats. But to protect their names so that they can keep the money doesn't get sympathy from me, given that, as members of Congress, our financial statements are on file, our payroll is on file, and the access to us is a matter of public knowledge. So I would just say, if I were CEO of AIG, I'll be happy to protect your name if you give the money back. But if you're going to keep public money in your pocket, then we're going to let the public know it's in your pocket, and you can figure out what you want to do. That's how I draw the line, Michael. This is a symptom, though. The AIG component of this is just what happens when Congress rushes to judgment, when we think we can manage businesses, when we start to nationalize businesses in America, when we allow a business to be declared to be too big to be allowed to fail. Then instead the federal government will step in and almost ensure failure when it comes to the private sector. I'd take AIG and I'd split them up just like we did Ma Bell, and we would figure out, we'd let them compete against each other, and one or two or three or maybe more of their entities would remain and could be profitable. Other companies would buy up the pieces, and we could move on. But if we are going to privatize profits and socialize losses, then this country is racing someplace to the left of European socialism. It will sap our vitality, and it will destroy the American dream ultimately. That's where I stand on the AIG issue. I appreciate the chance to talk with you today. Michael, thank you very much for having me on your program.
Great idea, Congressman. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The Obama administration keeps on trucking. Yeah. 2 years ago, many of you began calling into the Savage Nation when then-President Jorge Bush started a program allowing Mexican trucks into the U.S. to deliver their goods. It was dangerous because Mexican trucks don't have the same safety standards as U.S. trucks. It also puts U.S. truckers out of work. It put the lives of U.S. drivers on the line because Mexican truckers are allowed to drive much longer without stopping amigo, making them sleep-deprived and dangerous on the roads. George W., shall I say Jorge Bush, tried to push this down the throats of the American people, but was met with monster protests. Well, now Barack Obama is trying to reinvent the Bush program. The Office of the U.S. Trade Rep has said that they will work with Congress and so-called Mexican officials to come up with a new trucking project to meet our, quote, commitments on the NAFTA. In other words, they're more interested in the concerns of Mexico and the goods from Mexico, if you get my meaning, than they are in the concerns of the United States. This is all in line with what the Obama administration has done so far. You see, Obama spoke out against the Buy American provision in the stimulus bill. He's opposed the protectionism time and time again. That's because Obama doesn't want to be president of the United States alone. He wants to be presidente of the world. And here's what's on michaelsavage.com, the little site that could. Gitmo detainees could be released in the United States, according to the Wall Street Journal. That's right. Our esteemed Attorney General, Eric Holder, who released Puerto Rican terrorists when he worked for Clinton, who also gave a pardon to Mark Rich, are reviewing cases of approximately 250 Gitmo detainees, and some of them may be released into the general population of America. My only hope is that they're released into liberal counties so that they can respect and learn the diversity of America. From CNN, Dodd admits he was the one who put the bonus provision in the bill despite earlier denials. In other words, he lied and he got caught about it, and now he's telling the truth about having lied. So you decide whether he's lying now or he was lying then, or where he's lying and who he's lying with. You know what they say, when you lie down with lice, you get up lousy. Well, anyway, here's a story from Reuters on michaelsavage.com. The D.C. AIDS rate is higher than that in West Africa. Did you hear that? Now, of course, they're blaming it on the fact that the population is poor in a minority population, which has absolutely nothing to do with HIV/AIDS. Absolutely nothing to do with it. Behavior is the reason HIV/AIDS is out of control in certain areas, but don't tell that to the government flax. They want to blame it on race and poverty. The House passed a 90% tax for AIG bonuses. Really? Charles Rangel, chairman of the Tax Writing Committee? There's a man who wrangled one tax dodge after another for himself. Good job, Rangel. From the International Herald Tribune on michaelsavage.com, the Fed is about to pump another $1 trillion into the U.S. economy. Ah, what the heck. Once you have runaway inflation, there's no stopping it. From the Washington Times, Obama wants to disarm U.S. pilots. Now, today they said they don't. But, of course, yesterday they said they would. From Der Spiegel, Janet Napolitano, the most impossible-to-believe chairman of the Homeland Security Department, or whatever she is, said that the greatest threat to America is not terrorism, but man-caused disasters. Really? Tell that the next time planes fly into a building in America. Let's assume it was, what, done by the wind? From michaelsavage.com and original, the persecution of Lieutenant Colonel Chesani could continue. From the AP, 40% of U.S. births are out of wedlock. From the Associated Press on michaelsavage.com, the U.S. is to sign a U.N. gay rights declaration. How nice. How sensitive. From Fox News, the volunteerism bill being pushed by Obama the socialist is being called forced servitude. Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi, says enforcing immigration law is un-American and that customs agents are unpatriotic. Through the looking glass, anyone? From the San Francisco Comical, they are saying the SF elevator murder was an accident. Now, of course, that's a big lie. I can't understand how a nation that's obsessed with CSI and police shows and medical examiner shows doesn't understand that this is the greatest cover-up, why, in a very, very long time, and it's coming from the city of Fog. A report came out yesterday from the so-called medical mis-examiner in San Francisco who said that Daniel Kleeman, Dr. Daniel Kleeman, a pro-Israel activist, fell to his death after becoming trapped in an elevator at 55 New Montgomery Street. Yet, strangely enough, certain things stare out at you from the bottom of the elevator shaft. It turns out that the emergency call button, which would have linked the doctor to an operator, and the alarm bell were functioning at the time of the incident. They say that Kleeman fell to his death on the way to an Arabic lesson. Question number one, how come he was the only one on the way to the Arabic lesson when all the other members of the class had been notified? Had he not been notified? See, if I were a homicide detective, that's where I'd begin. Who in the school, the Arabic school, sent out the email saying class canceled? Go to them first. Next, it turns out that Dr. Kleeman's lover was an Arab from the Arabic class, another man. Did anyone investigate the lover? Did they talk to him and ask him what happened that night? Now, somebody read the autopsy report. Listen to this carefully. Listen to this double talk and BS that they think you idiots are going to believe. They said that they found the doctor at the bottom of the shaft with a purple pen in his left hand. The medical mis-examiner's report said it was possible that the doctor was able to pry open the elevator doors with that pen. Well, here's the question, Miss Medical Examiner. Where'd you get your medical degree? In a Kellogg's box? What a disgrace. This woman should be indicted immediately. The man falls 8 stories inside an elevator shaft. He fractures both arms in the fall, and the pen doesn't fall out of his hand? You mean it wasn't put in his hand after the fact? And by the way, was there any blood on the pen? Could the doctor have been using the pen to defend himself as he was being attacked? You see, ladies and gentlemen, something is wrong here. The newspapers say Kleeman's cause of death, accidental blunt force trauma, was initially cause for concern from friends and colleagues who said the Oakland doctor might have been killed because of his vocal and highly visible role with the counter-protest group SF Voice for Israel. Really? Well, not according to the San Francisco medical mis-examiner, nor to the police chief, Heather Fong, who wants this to go away, and to the mayor of San Francisco, Annie Tuesom Newsom, who wants to make certain that the homicide rate stays below a certain number, even if it stares him in the face. This is unbelievable to me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Strange case of Senator Chris Dodd. Senator Dodd has admitted that he, acting on behalf of the Obama administration, amended the bailout bill by himself so that AIG could give out $160 million in bonuses. Dodd is one of the master manipulators in Congress. You see, but he comes by it genetically. His father, Thomas J. Dodd, was also a U.S. Senator for Connecticut and was as corrupt in his day as are some today. You see, Dodd Sr. was hired by Guatemalan dictator Carlos Castillo Armas to lobby the U.S. government. And as a result of Sr. Dodd's efforts, Guatemala got millions of dollars in U.S. aid in the 1950s. In the 1960s, Dodd Sr. had a series of Nazi gun control laws translated into English so that portions of them could be incorporated into the Gun Control Act of 1968. In 1967, Dodd Sr. was censured by the U.S. Senate for using campaign funds for personal purposes. No censure so far for little Chris, for Dodd Jr. You see, it runs in the family. It's all in the family. But even before the AIG scandal, Chris Dodd has been involved in several scandals. You see, he got special deals that allowed him to refinance his homes in Connecticut and Washington, D.C. through Countrywide Financial, a campaign contributor. A staunch defender of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, Chris Dodd is the top recipient of campaign contributions from those two companies. Oh, yes, and then there was the Irish cottage controversy. Dodd bought a vacation home in Ireland with a partner who later was imprisoned for malfeasance. Dodd successfully lobbied for a pardon on his behalf and ended up with full ownership of the cottage in Ireland. So Chris Dodd is well-versed in controversy, and the Obama administration knows when they need a fixer on Capitol Hill, they go to him. You see, it's in their DNA. We all know what happened to the Jewish people during World War II. Not much is ever heard of stories of the Jewish refugees trying to escape from Germany and what they went through. Joining us today to talk about her new book, Flight from the Reich, is Deborah Dawick. Deborah, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me on today.
What's the premise of your book?
The main premise of the book is that refugee Jews are part of the history of the Holocaust, just like all other European Jews. Our book, Flight from the Reich, is the first book to integrate the refugee experience into Holocaust history. Where am I going with that? It's not a side story, but part of this whole history. Had these Jews not sought asylum, they too would have been caught in the machinery of death. So fleeing does not write refugees out of the story. It simply takes the story elsewhere. What I want readers to do is to step back, widen the lens, and understand the whole of the Holocaust in all of its atrocities. What happened in Europe, in camps, but also the press on European Jews, which forced over a million to seek safety elsewhere.
We haven't heard much about these refugees. Where has this story been?
The story has understandably been on Jews, particularly Jews who were caught and sent to death camps, Jews who went into hiding, understandably so. And what I am saying is all of this is true, and there is more to tell. There is more to know. And what is more to tell and to know is about the Jews who sought safety elsewhere. In Flight from the Reich, we follow Jews from everywhere, going everywhere. So it's an incredible story. It's a centrifugal story, literally, fleeing from the center, fleeing from the Nazi heart of Europe.
Well, give us some idea of what these people went through.
Let me give you an idea, even of the span of time. So we can start with a girl named Berta Rosenthal, who lived in a village in Germany in 1933. The April boycott, April 1st, 1933, in that small village, she and all her family realized that as far as their neighbors were concerned, they no longer existed. That was the turning point for her family. It took another 3 years, but ultimately they managed to escape to the United States. Let's go forward in time to 1938, to Robert Rosner and his family in Vienna. This was after the Anschluss of Vienna, of Austria, when the Germans took over, gobbled up all of Austria, to the excited welcome of the Austrians, I might add. Robert's family was so poor that they, first of all, could not afford a radio, not at all, to learn the news, but also they lived at the top floor in the back of a tenement where the very poorest, poorest families lived. You would think that this family with no resources would not be able to get anywhere. And yet this family, three children, two parents, tried each one to make it away and to help the rest of the family get away. And indeed they did. They all made it to England. War rolls out in September 1939. Many people think that there is no more refugee movement. All the doors closed. Let's take another example. A young couple, Yeni and Max Hans, who in 1942 managed with another young couple to cross three borders from the Netherlands into Belgium, from Belgium into France, from France into Switzerland, and made it to safety. So my point in this is to say Jews sought ways of finding life. They sought ways to help each other, and they kept going, even while the jaws of the Germans were snapping down on them, as with these Dutch young couples. They managed to get away.
Is there some correlation with what happened then in present-day situations?
Absolutely. I don't think that the past is a blueprint for the present. But as working on Flight from the Reich showed me, there are so many ways in which we can learn from the past, and it can help us to understand the world in which we live. And so one of the most obvious ways is that what we see in Flight from the Reich is the human tragedy of the people involved, of the problems they faced, and the obstacles they negotiated. At the same time, we see that the situation from which they fled was a political problem that needed to be solved politically. And that dichotomy, that way of looking at the refugees and their human problems and the genocidal situation as a political problem, that applies today. So we can look at Darfur, for example, or Congo, and we recognize the need to aid and assist refugees. And at the same time, we recognize that we need a political solution to the problem that is causing them to flee. I would like to bring up one thing, and that in Flight from the Reich, we found stories of villains and of heroes, human stories. And these stories were stories about Jews and stories about Christians, Christians of all kinds, many of whom hindered, some of whom helped. And so when I mentioned the story of Robert Rosner and his family who were so poor, or the story of Yemi and Max Hans, who together with another couple made it all the way to Switzerland, believe me, they could not have done it without the help of Gentiles who aided and assisted them and helped them to cross over borders. And also they couldn't have done it without the help of fellow Jews.
Thanks, Devorah. It's important that we know the story.
Thank you, Michael. I so greatly appreciate being on your show.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
No secret that the United Nations is trying to tell the world how to live, and now they want to tell countries how to behave, and now they're trying to tell every parent how to raise their children. Joining us today is Selwyn Duke, who's been following this issue for us.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be on the Savage Nation again. Today I want to alert your audience, Michael, to something very serious. This is something that threatens the very integrity of one of our most cherished institutions, and I'm talking about the family. Now, this threat is being promoted off the radar screen, and not surprisingly, the mainstream media won't tell people about it. And what is it? Well, it's something called the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Now, I know that may sound innocent enough, but hearing that Orwellian name, anyone with discernment will also hear warning bells. After all, we all know about how Big Brother has justified intrusion into the family time and again, saying, as every demagogue seems to today, it's for the children. For example, consider the excesses of child protective services agencies. And let me tell you, living where I do, within the gravitational pull of Den of Iniquity number 2, and I'm talking about New York City, I could relate some grapevine horror stories about social worker home invasions that would make your head spin. And here's just one little anecdote. I had an acquaintance whose 13-year-old son was actually required to strip down for social workers so they could examine him. He was 13 years old. Now, why did this happen? Because, get this, it was discovered he might have suffered a scratch while being restrained by a family member. Now, if you think that's bad, it's nothing compared to what the Convention on the Rights of the Child could visit on Americans nationwide if it's ratified by our government. For example, Chelsea Schilling at WorldNet Daily tells us, quote, "The international treaty creates specific civil, social, cultural, and even economic rights for every child and states that the best interests of the child shall be a primary consideration. While the treaty states that parents or legal guardians have primary responsibility for the upbringing and development of the child, Farris," that would be president of parentalrights.org, Michael Farris, "said government will ultimately determine whether parents' decisions are in their children's best interest," unquote. Now, unfortunately, believe it or not, this treaty is closer to becoming reality than you may think. It has already been ratified by 193 nations worldwide, and it was actually signed in 1995 by then UN Ambassador Madeleine Albright. Or maybe I should say Madeleine Halfbright, might be more appropriate. However, because of opposition by Senate conservatives, the U.S. was one of only two countries not to ratify the treaty. Not surprisingly, though, the Convention on the Rights of the Child's chances of passing muster today are far better, and we all know why this is. We've got devoted leftist Barack Obama in the White House and many more of his fellow travelers in the Senate. And these are people who are devout internationalists. They believe that virtue lies not in protecting culture and sovereignty, but in being a thoroughly amalgamated citizen of the world.
No borders, language, and culture with the UNers, huh?
No, Michael. I think the only border they recognize is the stratosphere. But look, in other words, with this treaty we stand at a precipice. We may approve what is a veritable declaration of war on parental authority. And let's consider some of the treaty's elements, as listed at parentalrights.org. And you won't believe this, and it's just a sampling. 1. Parents would no longer be able to administer reasonable spankings to their children. 2. Children could choose their own religion, while parents would only have the authority to give their children advice about religion. 3. The best interest of the child principle would give the government the ability to override every decision made by every parent if a government worker disagreed with that decision. 4. A child's right to be heard would allow him to seek governmental review of every parental decision the child disagreed with. 5. According to existing interpretation, it would be illegal for a nation to spend more on national defense than it does on children's welfare. 6. Children would acquire a legally enforceable right to leisure. 7. And listen closely to this one. Teaching children about Christianity in schools has been held to be out of compliance with the Convention on the Rights of the Child.
Wait, you've got to be kidding. Is this going to apply to Islam and Islamic countries too?
Yeah, Michael. I can really see Pakistan shutting down their 10,000 madrasas. Okay, now, I've got two more. Number 8. Allowing parents to opt their children out of sex education has also been held to be out of compliance with the Convention on the Rights of the Child.
Oh, it sounds like Alfred Kinsey's handiwork again.
Yeah, Michael. The ghost of Kinsey walks the earth, I think, and he's a United Nations diplomat now. And finally, number 9. Children would have the right to reproductive health information and services, including abortions, without parental knowledge or consent. Now, as bad as this is, you know what? We wouldn't have to worry about it if the treaty were an isolated legislative accident. The problem is that it's part of a deep cultural malaise, one that's been spreading and steadily eroding parental rights. For example, consider the precedent set by a court in the Gatineau region of Canada in a case involving a divorced father and his 12-year-old daughter. And this is truly outrageous. Listen to this. What happened was that the father forbade his daughter from going on a school trip because she had posted pictures of herself at an online dating site and then gotten into a rancorous argument with her mother. Well, the girl actually sued her father, which is allowed under Canadian law. Now, when I tell you about the outcome of the case, bear in mind that the Convention on the Rights of the Child would give children all over the world the right to sue their parents. So, what happened in the Canadian case? Well, a judge ruled that the father couldn't discipline his daughter because depriving her of the school trip was an excessive punishment. And the daughter's lawyer actually said, listen to this, She's becoming a big girl. It's a unique event in her life.
Unbelievable. If these compassionate lawyers care so much about the child, maybe they'd like to raise her.
Well, Michael, it seems they only know how to control parents, not children. But now, there's something we have to understand. This government intrusion is an intolerable, malevolent attack upon the family. And if we want to fully grasp this, we must understand that the family is a nation unto itself. It has a government, the parents, and the governed, the children. And this little nation, the family, has been called the central building block of civilization, and for good reason. If this small government is healthy, there's no need for big government. And let's look at something Ben Franklin said here. He said, "Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters." Well, how do you create virtuous people capable of managing freedom? The family. When the small nation of the family is healthy, parents tend to their responsibilities, and the children, in turn, are transformed into moral beings who will fulfill theirs, and they'll exercise their free will properly and become good citizens who have no need of masters. But a prerequisite for this is that the family government, the parents, must be able to ensure tranquility within their own borders. And this puts the matter in perspective. When big government trumps parental rights, when it thwarts parental discipline, it's doing nothing less than inspiring the factions, the children, within another government, the family, to revolt. And this means it then plays the role of a hostile power. A hostile power that's fomenting unrest and destabilizing a society of blood kinship. And why would it do this? Well, you could suspect that big government means to destroy the family government. But whatever the case, one thing is for sure. Big government should then be treated just the same way as any other foreign interloper with designs on the throne. In just the same way. Because it has committed an act of war. Michael, thanks for having me on this great show again, and God bless you and your audience.
Thanks, Selwyn. This is just unbelievable. Instead of a nanny state, we're becoming a nanny planet. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will in your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.